hashtag me too and hashtag balance ton port and other forms of pop culture, big media, social media outings of men in positions of power who have historically abused it. Time's up, hashtag time's up, similar, right? Like people looking at the relationship of heavier sexual abuse, rape issues in a continuum with what we might call everyday sexism. And we end up in all the vague problems when you try to build a continuum from I bumped into you or I spread my legs too much on a subway, and the difference between that and being a serial rapist who targets young women who need, you know, whatever is like a particular person's access to resources, right? So he's very, a giant continuum, and then people start to apply the same kinds of rhetoric to them, and so we end up, and then you hand that over to social media and pop culture, and we're in a very messy place about how to language this, how to build community with this. So that's happening. And also, in the Bay Area, in Buenos Aires, in Paris, there have already been big social media outings of people in the dance community. So it's already happening. And I'm not the only person who doesn't like the way it's happening once it jumps to Facebook, right? In the Bay Area, we spent 2 days of the teachers' meeting developing guidelines and protocols, and as soon as something happened that people didn't like, they went to Facebook and did not do the protocol. And the San Francisco protocols were built in relationship to Kathleen Ray's protocols in Toronto. And for example, there is a process that is started, and there are two ways to start the process. One is someone makes a complaint to the teachers or the organizers. The other one is the people in charge of the jam, the people in leadership positions in a jam or a festival, see something going on, and they could also start a process. And then what is the process? The first step is someone who is not close friends with the person goes to them and lets them know that regardless of their intent, they have had a negative impact on somebody. And we would like time to talk about it. We would like to make a meeting in 30 minutes, in 1 hour, later tonight after dinner. Are you available? When can you meet? And would you like to bring somebody with you as a witness or to defend you or to hear your defense? So it's not, I tell you, you already hate that person, so then you go out and you're like, you messed with Keith, and that person is like, that's a joke, because I didn't do anything wrong. And now you're just in a stupid conversation, right? So what would it look like for us to actually develop process or protocol to keep people in community, like where the goal is actually building community and not securing borders and kicking people out? Just, again, language coming out of the United States and Canada and some other places, we often will say it's calling out. So Keith did something wrong in his class, Mary calls me out. But the problem with that is that it's a lot of just like, now I am the judge and the jury and the police, and my call out is, you're bad, you're out. And so there is a new term, maybe it's useful, let's see in a year, of calling in. And calling in is, we're still saying you did the wrong thing or that there was negative impact. Now what can we do for you to stay in the room? How can we, like, we're not kicking Philip out because there was a misunderstanding, but we want to clarify that a misunderstanding happened, and we want to try to create conditions where that misunderstanding doesn't happen in the future. So this is more on the calling in. Yes.
Clarify some sort of like examples of the kind of misdemeanors you're talking about. That
great.
There's a lot of complaining and it's being taken seriously. For me, it's...
No, I got you. Yes. We'll do that next.
Yeah. Multiple offenders.
Like multiple offenders in a community. Yes.
Like the next year, he's doing the same thing.
Yeah. Let's keep this on the table. Are there other things that are coming up just instantly for people? All right. So let's go to these things that maybe are read as microaggression. Do people understand the language of microaggression in your world?
Could you please define microaggression?
Yeah. It's a microaggression is something, it's not that big of a deal, except that it either triggers a previous experience that was more serious and traumatic, or it's a microaggression because when you add up all of those microaggressions, they actually show how power is constructed unfairly in a society. So sexist microaggressions are actions generally by men that continually affirm that women have less power in a situation. And it could be very small, it could be interrupting, it could be the physical space, it could be always curating more male teachers than female teachers. There's many ways that the microaggression could add up. Some people think that the guy who is always lifting the women is at the beginning of a microaggression because he's affirming a certain kind of cliche about male strength and women needing to be picked up, or that his job is to provide the fun experience and her job is to have the fun experience, right? So even that could be seen as a microaggression in a repeat offender. So what are the microaggressions in contact? When you look at Kathleen Ray's things, it's hands touching breasts and genitals, for example.
That's a microaggression.
Well, again, it's I'm not going to touch your breasts, but if I'll just elevate your breasts above you, then can I run my hand across you? So it's more like this kind of thing. And I would say one of the things that we're dealing with, when it goes across the breasts, one of the things we're dealing with is that we were given a dance form that did not come from bodywork. And even if you look at the early Aikido relationship to what a hand is, mm-hmm. right? It's this, were you already dealing with this thing?
Yeah.
Right, the hand as this instigator of the spiral, this as the force, and then also, I mean, some people do this, I don't know Aikido at all. Some people do this thing of like separating these three fingers from these two in terms of like what they do, how you work them. So if our dancing is all based on this kind of pressuring with the hand, it's just very different than if we're coming from body work, massage, energy work, and so then we're in this open palm. And many of us combine these touches in our dances. And for beginners, it's super confusing. Because the next thing you know, can I touch your head?
Not only for beginners.
Yes, but what happens is that people go from this into this. Right? It's totally normal. It happens all the time. How did you get into that position? Where did that come from? Recording. I just held someone's head with my palms in my hand and moved it back and forth. There's the picking up. Another one is the moving into body work at the side of the floor or moving into cuddling without any kind of discussion or eye contact or anything else. So we have the good dance, and then we act like the dance has no end. Again, when you look through people's guidelines, they're really big on if the teachers could focus more that a dance has an end. And help people to see that this experience, let's ground it and move on to the next one. Lunch, and it's one of the reasons it's a problem is that there are many people coming here, and many of us have participated in communities where this dance has changed the way that we see touch and relationships. And we like it. And we want the whole world to be like this. We want to be able to go to lunch and have a bit more physical intimacy with people. So how does the dance end? How do we renegotiate contact outside the dance? And what is this space? How do we build a language that, where we actually know that there's a difference between dancing the edge of the dance floor and not dancing, or dancing off the floor? And how do we help students know that what happened on the dance floor, it's not a rule that this has to happen after lunch, during the half-hour break after lunch. It's not a rule that if someone comes up and sits next to you and starts rubbing, that you need to engage with that. Right? What were some of the other really specifics? And the thing is, if anyone's looking for examples, reading Brooks Yardley's zine, and it's written on here, it's story after story. Yes?
Keep your mark. Personally, I have a very different no dancing space when I'm on a festival or when I'm on a jam, even I'm not. These borders are really moved. So when you're speaking for me, I'm sometimes getting confused because going to the lounge over there is still staying within the framework of a festival.
Yes.
There are things which are still allowed, which I would have never thought or assumed allowed if I was on the festival.
Yeah, maybe we need to add this. This is a great context. So let's say that there's a dancing space, there's an edge of dancing space, there's a not dancing space, and there's a festival space. Meaning that we are in the context, and this festival space is talking to all three of these spaces, and it's also a culture of touch. And maybe when we each return home, we are in a different culture than we are here.
Yeah.
I think still, we need to look at where these boundaries are clear and vague. So I think your point is great, but it even makes it more strong that we need, like, if we're teachers, we need to understand what we're doing in these spaces and how these spaces impact us or we influence them. Yeah. I'm just going to do a quickie on here to see if there's anything else that's more in the specific. Yes. Again, in the Toronto one, non-consensual passing by. So there's this...